So let's talk about Jocko podcast number 4, Rendezvous with Death. So the first part, he talks about this poet or poem by Alan Seeger, who writes what is later titled The Rendezvous with Death, and winds up being correct because he dies. It says, on July 5th, 1916, Alan Seeger died during the massive Allied attack at the Somme River. And he was, after being mortally wounded by a barrage of 6 German machine guns. You had mentioned something to me before, that you said the videos from World War One were insane.
Yeah.
Do you want to, like, elaborate on that?
Jocko talked about a video, like, and it was on a previous Jocko, when he was saying that shell-shocked was similar to PTSD, but, like, it just didn't seem right what he was saying. But I looked at the video that he was talking about. It's just on YouTube. You just look up shell-shocked, and it's a guy that basically looks like he's stir-crazy, like just not human function at all. And it's funny enough that they say, here's the man before treatment. They just see him like, you know, I don't know how to describe it, to be honest. It's not human. And then after, he just walks down a hall. And they're like, okay, he's cured. You know, like the old 1910s, like, that a boy, get back out there. Kind of vibe. Like, it was weird. Like, what was treatment? I just ended up having more questions. And then there was, like, a few side videos. I just kind of went down a hole. I looked at, like, some of the things in World War One about gassing and how that, like that's how it all started. Because you're in trenches, right? And usually things would just end up in a stalemate. Both sides were just like, we're waiting for you to make a move, or vice versa.
Most of the podcast covers Adolf von Schell's book, Battle Leadership, yeah. Which is actually available for free online. So I'll link it in the show notes in the podcast description. But there's one line that I think illustrates that from the book. Let me go ahead and read that to you. It says, the psychological impressions of battle were simpler. He said, rifle and cannon rules the battlefield, and the enemy could be seen previously. But in modern war, we fight against an enemy we can't see. The machine rules the battlefield. We no longer fight in great masses, but in small groups.
Yeah. And you know what? You're going to see, like, mark my words. Like, war is just going to be fought with, like, just like special forces. Like, you're just going to use, like, let's take SEAL Team 6, for example. Like, when the objective is small, like when your target is small, why use a large group of people and a lot of resources to move those people? So I kind of understand that. You just kind of go to, like, okay, here's the guy, here's the head of the problem. We cut the head off the snake, sort of philosophy, and then the rest crumble, right? So we just send a SEAL team to just kind of go there and do it. Now, when you occupy land, I think you actually need more people, but I hope we do that less and less.
Well, I think the actual outcome will be more in line with machines fighting machines. I mean, if you really think about how a lot of war, especially like when, so we talked about, I think last week or the week before, the difference between like maneuver warfare and what was the other term that we learned? Yeah, they were comparing and contrasting, attrition warfare.
Yeah.
Okay, so attrition warfare is where we're going to go stand toe-to-toe with the enemy and fight until one of us goes down. Okay, so that was like World War One, right? World War II. And then, excuse me, in maneuver warfare, the emphasis is on maneuvering. So they were talking about that in regards to like the Vietnam War, which is much more of like a guerrilla tactic. And I would even say like the wars that Jocko fought in, where by the time he gets to Iraq, the initial invasion's already over, and it's turned into more of like a guerrilla warfare because he's doing urban, you know, combat. There's civilians mixed in. So if that's going to be the like the standard, the status quo for military interventions and future wars, I just don't see how, like, the amount of money that is invested is in what, if not hundreds of billions, if not trillions globally in weapon manufacturing. Like, it seems to be like human beings are like the virtuosos of violence, you know? So whether it's drones or these robots that you see with like that can like carry packs and like do backflips and all this other crazy stuff, I guess it's a long-winded way to say, like, in my mind's eye, the more I think about it, it's like looks very much akin to like Terminator, if you remember how it was in that science fiction movie.
Yeah, I actually, man, I really think you're gonna need humans at some point. There's just certain aspects of war that, like, if you just have machines, you just avoid the machines. Right? Like, I don't know. I mean, there's only so much.
I don't know.
Like,
I mean, I'm sure there's people. How do you avoid a drone strike?
You go underground, bro. Like, you stay in buildings, man. You stay in the cave. You stay in your.
Well, building's not going to help because it'll just shoot right through the building.
But you have to confirm that the person's in the building. Like, I still think you're going to need
I don't think they do. I think there's a lot of civilian casualties when it comes to drone
strikes. Yeah, there is.
I think, like. Yeah, I don't think they're going to be like, oh, we just have to... they're going to make... It's humans. They're going to make mistakes. But underground is one thing. But other than that, like, I don't think... Again, all technology is to me is just a way for humans to have more leverage, yeah. Right? And so as that technological progress continues, and if it even grows at a faster rate, then that all you can likely assume that the leverage that each individual human being will have will be vastly outpace our abilities to protect ourselves. Yeah.
So could you imagine the future just kind of being like, you ever watch that show BattleBots? Like if that's warfare, like what's the pride of nations? Like how do you get behind something like that? Like it just doesn't seem like there's no skin in the game for war, so war just might get out of control.
While I was trying to find the information for Adolf von Schnell, I looked up shell shock, the actual definition, because it says it's a psychological disturbance caused by prolonged exposure to active warfare.
Britain shelled 120,000 rounds the first day of war. 120,000 rounds, like, that was spent. Like, that's a lot. And if you're just sitting there just taking it, videos explained, like, on that day, the noise could be heard from 300 miles away. Imagine being on the battlefield. Like, it has to have a huge psychological effect. Thing, like, the worst part about it is, and this is a previous episode, that they just killed those guys and called them treasonous. Because they didn't understand it was a psychological damage. Rather, they're like, these guys are cowards, and they just capped them. There's a threat, life threat, and you don't know where it's coming from or what to do about it.
What, you know, going back to the shell shock thing, because I just read my next note too, and it's from Battle Leadership, and it says, when a soldier lies under hostile fire and waits, he feels unable to protect himself. He has time, and he thinks. Mm. He waits for the shot that will hit him. He feels a certain inferiority, alone and deserted. So what you were just saying about some of the videos and stuff you saw, how not only how loud it is on the battlefield, but if they were dropping, what was it, 120,000 bombs you just said? What was it,
shells.
The number?
Yeah, 120,000.
Okay, so 120,000 in one day. I wonder if the duration, like the prolonged duration, is what causes shell shock.
I mean... It could happen in a matter of seconds, but I do think shell shock, you would have to be endured for hours, and that was very, very common in World War One.
Yeah, everything I'm reading is saying that it's bombardment. So that term to me means like it's constant. So another thing I thought was really interesting is how Jocko always uses the metaphors from war, but they usually, you know, can be applied to anything, probably to your day-to-day life, your business, or whatever the case is. And he talks about the difference between the offensive mode and the defensive mode, right? And so in that, the quote I just read you, like if you're just a soldier sitting there under hostile fire, just waiting to be mortared, because it was this podcast, if I'm not mistaken, he was talking about the times where him and one other guy in Iraq just spent an entire night being mortared. I've been listening to a lot of Jocko, so it might not be this episode, but I'm pretty sure it was. Okay, yeah, and the guy's like, well, what should we do? Should we just run? And Jocko's like, no, we wait. But the difference between that, he talks about, I think people get into two modes. Modes where they're being offensive and making things happen, and modes where they are defensive and things are happening to them and they're having to react. And then the lesson he pulled away from that, he's like, if you think about when times were good, it's when you were being offensive. And then he said, compare that to when you were financially secure versus when you're not, or when you're healthy versus when you're not. It changes your perspective. So I think that is like a really important lesson, because in life, like, if you're just letting it happen to you, you might be much more discontent. You're not going to get shell-shocked in daily life. But that constant, like, anxiety or depression or any of these other negative feelings that humans seem to cultivate, I think Jocko's, like, remedy for that is action.
Mm-hmm. When we talk about, like, machines getting more and more prevalent in the battlefield, there was a couple of things that they talked about in the podcast. Well, when I say they, I mean Jocko referring to the book. And I found it very interesting, and that was the subject of the knowledge of man. And it was like, number one, knowledge of men cannot be learned from books, which was a great quote. And then he dived into it even further, saying that people have tried. But number two, men react differently in war than any other time of, I guess, like in time of peace or whatever. Just men are different in war. So you can't. There's no counterpoint in any other peacetime that you can draw from. Like, it's wartime experience that makes you good at wartime, right? So it's like that's got to be tough to learn from a book. And of course you can learn from the book, but we're so wildly unpredictable and innumerously different, or immensely different, or incalculably different. Like, it's just like, how could one learn, you know? The full psychology of man. And like,
no, I don't think you can ever learn the full psychology, like, of man, but I think the point of the point of studying history and the point of being well read in general, I just think it helps you, like, sniff out bullcrap, you know? And then you start to see, like, there's just I always use the line that history doesn't repeat, human nature does. And even, I think Jocko would even disagree with, you know, that you can't learn from books, because he talks about on the first podcast, where he would read Hackworth's book almost every night when he was in Iraq, and he would just see the same lessons that Hackworth came up against playing out in Iraq, and then understanding, he said it gave him an understanding of why these things happen. Now, obviously, you know, it to your point, human behavior is very variable, so it's not going to follow along like a perfect script, but you'll have an understanding of why humans are doing something that they're doing, and then you can avoid their pitfalls. I think more than anything, it's like, it's trying to learn from the mistakes of others, because one of the best ways to learn is to make your own personal mistake. But you have a limited, like, finite lifespan to which to learn from. So I'm not, like, I think about this. So, like, the reason I do, like, my other podcast, Founders, and it's just about, like, history of entrepreneurship. It's the best way to learn about what I would say combat or entrepreneurship or whatever the case is like by doing, right? So you're going to learn by doing. The second best way is learning from people that did what you're trying to do before you, you know? And I think that's why Jocko gravitates towards, like, you know, he read a lot even when he was on deployment, because he's engaged in this activity, and there's thousands of years of human history where there's also other humans that are engaged in this activity. So I would definitely disagree with you can't learn from books. I don't think book knowledge ever replaces, like, life experience. I don't think it should.
I want to clarify my thoughts is that, like, I do think you gain some sort of experience somewhere in your lexicon of thoughts. But from a leadership perspective, knowing exactly each human's ability, you know, what they're designed to do in their own head, and how that's going to unfold may not be as predictable as one thought, because you've read a lot of books about history.
Well, moving on to the QA part, because I feel like I learn a lot when he answers questions from his audience.
Longboard or shortboard?
No, not the surfing questions, although that, you know, might be interesting to some people. The thing I love about listening to him, and what like it reminds me, is just like a smack in the face, where anytime you think you're doing well, that, like, it's just a reminder that you could constantly be doing better. And I love his the way he, like, manages time. So he's like, you probably don't have too much on your plate. You probably aren't doing good time management. You're sleeping in late. You're on the internet when you should be working. You're listening to music, etc. You're not focused on attacking your problems. And he's like, his solutions are beautiful because they're so simple. It's like, solution, quit wasting time. He's like, if you're truly taxed, and this is where, like, a lot of the lessons, if you read Extreme Ownership, I think are very handy. It's like, his rule number one is prioritize and execute. He's like, just list your tasks in order of priority and then tackle the highest priority first. That's one sentence. It's very basic language. It's a very simple idea. And yet it's so uncommon in observable human behavior that we actually do that. We love to like let our mind wander or procrastinate or just pick up anything. And I feel like, to me, the reason I constantly want these reminders in my own life is because now most of our consumption is digital. You know, like the average, I think, American stares at their cell phone, or their smartphone, 5.5 to 6 hours a day. They unlock their iPhone like an average like 150 times a day. We're in these hamster wheels of people grabbing our attention. I saw that you posted something that quotes one of my favorite Twitter feeds. It's called the Stoic Emperor.
Is that the actual feed? It's so good.
So I'm just gonna read that because it really made me think of what Jocko's saying. And it says, your attention has real economic value. How much of that value are you capturing? How much is being captured by Facebook or Netflix or CNN? Your attention has value to others. It should be priceless to you. Don't give it away carelessly. And to me, what Jocko's saying is like, you don't have too much. You're wasting it on things that are not essential. And I think that is that we're literally wasting our most valuable asset. And that's time. The two most valuable assets, time and attention. So we realize, okay, if your attention and your time is very valuable, right? Well, why is it valuable? And to me, it's because it's finite. It's the only thing that we have not figured out how to reproduce. And so he says, we all have a rendezvous with death. There is no escaping that. This trip we are on is short. And that like gives me goosebumps when I hear that. And so he's like, well, think about it like this. Instead of being like, I have a rendezvous with death, I liked how he flipped it. He's like, have a rendezvous with destiny.
Yep.
Make the most of your opportunities that you have and do it with hard work, focus, and drive.
Yeah. I borrow from Marcus Aurelius. It says, let destiny find me prepared. Rather kind of like the way I look at it this summer. And that's, you know, that's been very helpful to me on just like getting myself motivated to do, you know, things that I need to do rather than the things that I just sit there, mindless.
I do think, you know, keeping that in mind, the quote from Jocko where he's like, listen, you have a rendezvous with your destiny. Don't waste it because your trip is short. Mm-hmm. I just think that's a good parting message.
Jay, I'm thankful. And I guess not in World War One.
Yeah, for real. And I guess we'll close on that. I will talk to you about Jocko episode 5 very soon.
Looking forward.